It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Bounce pass to the pocket to Kupis, Redwell, and stolen by Cousins. Two on two to the other end. Cousins keeps, dunks it, and he's fouled by Temple. Possible three-point play coming.
Wham, bam, thank you, Sam.
Can we be there? Oh, just think of the time.
I don't have to think about it right here, right now. Wham, bam, thank you, fam.
I like that.
Oh, not bad. Not bad.
No, not bad at all.
How about that? What a turn of events.
Just a little bit.
It is the definition of the rich getting richer. Golden State just won their third title in the last 4 years, and somehow, Stoke just got stronger.
And not just a little bit, a lot. You're talking about a guy that can shoot the three, but he's a physical presence inside.
It's a bulldozer.
Brings a toughness to that team along with Draymond. I mean, tell me a weakness. And maybe he's not ready to play right away. Look, Achilles surgeries nowadays are like ACLs. I mean, they just bam, bam. He'll be fine. I understand he's a big man. Put a lot of, a lot more strength. I had my Achilles done in, 07? Look, it's fine.
You're good.
I'm good. Oh, yeah. They do those things now with their eyes closed. He's going to have no issues, and maybe they take it slow with him. But, man, tell me a weakness on that basketball team.
There is not. They have the most talented team that has ever been assembled in the history of basketball. And it's just the reality of the situation.
I would like to tell you you're crazy, but you're right. I mean, you might have to go back to, the 60s or 70s and look at some of those Celtics teams or I don't know. I wasn't alive then. But you look at this group, and I think it's hard to argue that.
You would have to go back to, even to draw some sort of semblance of talent. You'd have to go back to those Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, all in their prime at the same time.
DJ.
Yep, sure. Yeah, exactly.
Don't forget DJ.
Absolutely not. He's there in that mix. Danny Ainge, of course. And I think their peak year was, I believe, for the Celtics was 1986, when everyone was in their prime at the same time. But the Lakers had the same thing, too. When the all-time leading scorer in the history of the sport, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in his prime. Magic Johnson was in his prime. James Worthy, finals MVP. Byron Scott at one point was scoring 20 a night. AC Green. But even then, see.
Best hair in basketball.
Right. That's right. AC Green, number 45, I believe. But even then, when you start to taper, off.
Yeah, it's not close, man. You look at these five, and it's just wow. That's all you can really say about it. I mean, it's impressive. Does anybody else have a chance? And we were kind of talking yesterday about Boogie Cousins going to the Lakers, and that would have been a great move, and that would have been a great pairing with him and LeBron. But now going to Golden State, it pretty much ends all discussions on next year. I don't see how it's possible, barring injuries. They do happen. Maybe he doesn't come back and he has a setback.
Dysfunction.
And then somebody else, something happens to one of these other stars, and now you're down to only three true superstars.
Right.
But other than that, look, it's over. I mean, it's a wrap. There is no chance for anybody else. There will be no dysfunction there. There will be none. Steve Kerr runs that organization, that team, as a head coach, and it's just a perfect fit. And that group as a whole that's been together, you don't see many issues. Yeah, Draymond has his rants every now and then. But other than that, look, they play great team ball. They're all committed to winning. They're having fun. They seem like they all get along. And Boogie Cousins, you didn't hear anything from him this year.
Nope.
Yeah, they had a lot of dysfunction in Sacramento, but this year you heard nothing from him. I think he's going to fit in nicely there. I think he knows his role there. And I think he's open to that. And he wants to go and win. He's not going to be an issue at all.
And he also needs to get his value back.
Absolutely.
I mean, he got a mid-level deal. I mean, what a bargain. We thought before that guy tore his Achilles that he was going to be the definition of a max player. He needs to recoup some of his value as a player. And what better way to do it than go win a championship in Golden State?
And I think he'll do that.
And you mentioned him signing with the Lakers. Still expecting that to happen. Expecting that to happen after this year. Go join LeBron James. Yep, after this year. And don't look now, but that Warriors team, and I'm not saying it's going to lead to dysfunction, but down the stretch of this season, it wouldn't shock me at all if guys are starting to, a little bit to a degree, figure out what's next for them. Klay Thompson, next year, will be an unrestricted free agent. Kevin Durant signed a 1-1. So it's a one-year deal for this year and a player option for the next year. You got some
KD and Boogie over to the Lakers.
Dude, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
And that's really what interests me with the NBA is things can change so quickly. And the landscape of the NBA can change so quickly because a lot of these guys are signing that 1-1.
Right.
With the player option.
That's right.
So every year is very interesting this time of year because the landscape can shift so, so quickly. And all of a sudden, it could be Golden State again this year, but if they lose a couple pieces and those pieces go to the Lakers, now we got something. And I think that's what I want to see. I want to see two teams battling it out. Right now, you just got one, but it can change quickly. There needs to be a rivalry.
Mm.
And with LeBron in L.A., if they can get a couple more pieces and maybe steal a piece or two from Golden State, that would be something. Now, that would interest me. And then you got, you know, maybe the Eastern Conference over there. You got Boston. If they can muster up enough, you got a lot of young talent. Haywood comes back.
Sure.
Kyrie stays.
Sure.
You know, you got something there in the Eastern Conference also. And so that's for me, that's what you need. You need to have a rivalry between a couple teams. And right now you don't.
There seems to be a extremely negative blowback from this. And you're hearing a lot of people say, oh, this is going to be the demise of the NBA. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And I'll tell you why in a second. But
you did some research, huh?
I did. And it's just, I'm not even going to share opinions. I'm just going to relay some facts. But for you personally, will this affect your, I know you're not a big NBA guy anyway, okay? So I know that going into this question. But you do watch. You watch the playoffs. You watch
the
big regular season games. You check them out if they're interesting. Will this alter your viewing habits in a negative way?
No.
Okay.
No. I'll still tune in on occasions. I'll still follow the Nuggets. And I'll watch some of the bigger games. And, you know, when Golden State's on, who's not going to want to watch them? When the Lakers are on, who's not going to want to watch them? When the Celtics are on, I want to watch them also.
Sixers,
yes.
Houston Rockets?
Yeah, so there's a handful of teams that I will tune into. And you throw the Nuggets in there. And that's kind of what I always do. I'm not a diehard NBA fan where I'm grinding over these games every single night.
Right.
But I won't tune in any less now because Boogie Cousins is going to Golden State. And they got this super teams. Won't affect me at all. I'll just continue to do what I've always done.
And I think you're actually a pretty good reflection of most fans. You know, you hear the echo chamber of Twitter and how, you know, the NBA is going to burn up in flames. You know, you listen to Mike Evans. Oh, I mean, the league is halfway in the grave.
It's done. It's a wrap.
Oh, man. I'll tell you why. That could not be further from the truth and giving you cold, hard facts in addition to a fascinating conversation.
And I want to know also, you got to tell me where the odds are. We talked about some of the odds, I think, yesterday about championship odds, and you saw the Lakers drop down after LeBron. I want to know where the odds are after Boogie Cousins signed with Golden State and see how much it changed for them.
You know what? That's an interesting one because they may be... It could be the old Tiger versus the field.
Yeah.
And just
Remember those? Oh, yep.
Just a 1-1. Tiger versus the field. Oh, my goodness. Well, how about those days? Simple question as it relates to Golden State. Are they now the biggest villain in all of sports? We'll dive into it next. Stoke, simple question. Are the Golden State Warriors now the biggest villain in all of sports. Maybe dethroning the New England Patriots.
Nope, not yet.
Really?
No, not yet. Still the Patriots. Patriots are the number one villain in all of sports right now. They've been on an epic run over the last 20 years, and so they are still the biggest villain. Golden State is getting close. They're close second. But when you have a run that, you know, spans, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
That takes a cake over this five-year run or whatever it is for Golden State. That's my opinion. That's what I think. But I want to know what Broncos country thinks. 303-713-1043, RamosLaw.com, text line. What do you think, Jack?
No, I still don't think they're the most hated because they have a handful of likable guys. Like this is all a collection of, and now maybe Boogie Cousins with his element, and he can be a, you know, sort of a squeaky wheel, sour grape, bad attitude. He comes off like a punk a lot of the times. But Kevin Durant in general is likable. Klay Thompson in general is very likable.
Yeah.
Steph Curry's family man, likable. These aren't guys that, you know, are me. They're guys who have actually checked their ego and welcomed in other stars. It's a very unique thing we're watching here. I've never quite seen anything like it.
And they're good guys, and they do a lot in the community. They spend a lot of their money out in the community by doing good things. And
sure.
Even DeMarcus Cousins does. And I've seen different things that he's done with his money and where he's put it. And so when you look at those things on top of these guys, just like you said, KD, I mean, just good guys and just likable guys.
Yeah.
It is hard to really pull against them. But at the same time, it's sports. And so I think you have to – when a team just wins so much, you people pull for the underdog.
Yeah.
And they get tired of it.
Right.
And they want to see competition. And when one team is just blowing other teams out and it's not, you know, you look at the finals. I mean, it wasn't fun to watch. 4-0. So you just pull against that team. And they've won enough. I think that's for the average fan, I think that's how they feel about it.
It is so interesting to see the dynamic shift in the NBA because it used to be, remember we used to have the conversation, whose team is it? Right? Remember we used to have that those conversations about NBA teams? Like, whose team is it? If you were to ask that question about the Warriors, whose team is it? I don't know how to answer. You could say very fairly Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. They're both MVPs. You know, but Klay Thompson is you know, on any given night, their best player. Draymond Green's the defensive player of the year.
I think you go Steph and KD, right? But then right after that, I think it's Draymond. And you see what he means to that team. I mean, remember 2 years ago? What was it, two or three years ago? I forgot. But remember when he got suspended and had to sit out the game?
Yeah.
They had that series won against Cleveland up 3-1.
Up 3-1.
Next thing you know, they lose that series because he has that suspension, and they're just not the same basketball team. So you could throw Draymond in there.
And you want to know what's funny with Draymond? Like, if I asked you, hey, what's Draymond Green's best attribute? You may say toughness or maybe even defense. Of course, I reference him being defensive player of the year and then runner-up two separate other times. The guy was top 10 in the NBA in assists this year. Draymond Green was.
He does everything really, really good. He can shoot the three. He can defend. He can pass the ball. Set up other guys. He's not selfish. Very unselfish player. Does all the dirty work. So he does everything really, really good. There is really no weakness in his game.
Someone says, did the Warriors sign you guys too? That's from Danny. We are the type of guys they would go after.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
cream of the crop. I mean, why not?
Just saying.
I'll move out there to San Fran.
You will not. You stay right there. and let me just say this about the Denver Nuggets. You know, I heard the guys this morning, and I've heard folks, you know, on Twitter and say, you know, the Denver Nuggets are, you know, an 8 seed or a 7 seed. We got to remember, guys, the Nuggets won 46 games. The Spurs, the Timberwolves were playoff teams. They won one more game. The Pelicans, the Jazz, the Thunder were all playoff teams, seeds 4, 5, and 6. They won two more games than the Nuggets. Let me get crazy. The Portland Trailblazers were the third third overall seed in the Western Conference. Stoke, they won three more games than the Nuggets.
Well, you remember 2 weeks left to go in the season, and we were all right there. Like, the Portland Trailblazers were right. I mean, they could have missed the playoffs, and all of a sudden they get hot. Nuggets, you know, start sputtering a little bit, and then next thing you know, they're the three seed. But that's how close the Western Conference playoff standings were with 2-3 weeks left to go in the season.
I'm going to make a prediction right now, and I want everyone to remember it that can hear it right now. Steven, save the audio.
Uh-oh.
Okay?
Goodness.
Being dead serious. Now, this isn't a lunch bet. This is just me calling my shot because this is the way I feel. I'm not doing it for stick. I'm being authentic right now on July 3rd. Save the audio. The Denver Nuggets will be in the playoffs this year, and they'll be hosting a first-round playoff series.
So that needs they have to be the fourth seed?
Correct.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Said yesterday that they could be a 4 or 5 seed. I think that you're on to something, but they will be in the playoffs. And could it be the fourth seed? Or, I mean, do you think they could get to 3?
I think they could. I mean, if this past year is any frame of reference, look, I'm expecting the Pelicans to take a step back, the Spurs to take a step back. Those are two playoff teams that won 1 and 2 games more than the Nuggets that kept Denver out. But I'm also keeping in mind that the guy you paid $30 million played less than half of the season. And it's hard to get moving parts immediately to play well together anyway. You know, so there was new players, there's young players. I'm expecting the entire unit to take a step forward. Look, they won 42 games the previous year. Stoke, they won 46 games. If they go from 46 games to and win four more than 50, you're a 3 seed.
You know what you're doing?
What am I doing?
A little bit like we were doing with the Rockies.
Assuming.
That, you know what, you look at last year and this year is going to be so much better because look at the pieces they've added and they've got another year of experience and it just, you got to go out there and actually do it though.
Sure.
And you can hold that to task. Right, for me, that kind of has me nervous a little bit. You know, we're all expecting Jokic now all of a sudden to be, seems like a top 5 player, you know, and I'm just real hesitant to look at it that way right now until they actually go out there and show me. And you said 4 seed. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think they're going to be more around a 6 seed.
Would you take that? Would that be
yeah,
a win?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just making sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cool.
Look, if you're in the playoffs, that's a win. I think Mike Malone would take it, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I think Josh Kroenke would take it. Just getting the playoffs. So whether you're 4 seed, 5th seed, 6th seed, 8th seed, it doesn't matter. Get in the playoffs, that would be a good thing. And that means you're heading in the right direction.
Do you mind if I really quick get something off my chest?
Oh, no.
Everyone lock in with me for a second because I've been hearing a lot of nonsense of the NBA is dying, the NBA, it's headed down this wrong path. We are in the age of super teams.
Spearheaded by who? Mike Evans?
Mike Evans and just a host of others. Yeah, he's not the only one.
Well, he's leading that.
Let me tell you this.
Wagon.
We are in the age of super teams, right? This past season would be the most point of super teams that we've had in league history. Guys, the ratings are up for a 5th consecutive year. ABC's ratings were not up 1%. They were up 17%. TNT's ratings were not up 2%. They were up 13%. Okay? The hard-to-reach adult, the millennial, 18 to 34, rating up 14%. Median age of a viewer is 42 as compared to 50 with the NFL or 57 with Major League Baseball. Local TV ratings up across the board 3%. Attendance increased for a 4 straight season. The NBA set the all-time record this year with 741 sellouts. When it comes to sales, NBA League Pass up 63%, Stoke.
Wow.
63% year over year. Online merchandise up 25% year over year. Average value of an NBA franchise up 22% year over year. 7.4 billion in revenue for the league, up 25% year over year. Oh, but the NBA is about big markets. No, for the first time since 1960, none of the top 3 markets in America were even in the playoffs. That's all coming from Forbes. The league's not dying.
It's just facts.
There's a loud majority out there telling you that this is the death of the league when the numbers and the facts and the concrete evidence suggest the complete opposite.
Nice work. Nice homework.
Thank you.
Hey, you got to turn
Forbes.
Your homework in when you do it. Like, we got to get that out there.
And
get that off your chest. That was good stuff.
Thank you. All that information is from Forbes.
Right.
I didn't make that up. That's from Forbes.
It wasn't you just like doing what you do sometimes, just like make things up.
Right.
I'm like, whoa, I got to double check that. So I actually believe you on this one. Good job.
Oh, what element of the game will dictate the Broncos' record the most? One of our hosts has a suggestion, and we'll bounce it off Stoke next. What element of this football team will dictate the record the most for the Denver Broncos? And what got us thinking about this is I heard Alfred Williams yesterday talking about our group of running backs and just how far this team can go.
To me, our running back position here in Denver has been woeful at best. The Broncos running back group is the worst in the AFC West when you consider who we play against and the talent that they have. This team will be as good as its running back group. When I tell you this team is going to be as good as his running back group, because they need to run the ball. They need to run the ball because their defense is going to keep them in every game.
He said this team, this Broncos team, will only be as good as their running backs are. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I think the running game as a whole, and you got to throw the offensive line in there also. That plays a big role, and if the offensive line isn't creating any holes, it's going to be hard to have a good running game. But I think the running game as a whole, yes, I do. Look, that if you can run the football, it opens up so many things. And it will open up the passing game. And you'll see DT and Emmanuel have big years. You'll see Case Keenum have a year like he did last year. But that's if you can run the football.
Right.
And you know what else it allows you to do? It allows you to rest your defense, keep them on the sideline a little bit more, change field position. I mean, look, there's nothing easier than just turning around and handing the football off and getting yards. So I think when you look at how to win football, how to close out football games too, the last 5-6 minutes of a game, if you have a good running game and you can chew up clock and you have a 2-3-4-7-point lead, and now all of a sudden, you know, you run the clock out and you end up with the football because you can run the football, that's how you do it. Or next thing you know, you waste 4 or 5 minutes off the clock, and the opposing offense only has a minute to do it.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with Big Al. Running the football will be the biggest part of this team being successful next year.
He had a statement in there where Alfred said the Broncos have the worst running back group in the AFC West.
Right.
Do you agree with that? I mean, well, and before I get your answer in Los Angeles, I guess now you got Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. In Kareem Hunt in Kansas City, you have a guy like Kareem Hunt, and I guess Tyreek Hill worked in the passing game, or in the running game a little bit with sweeps and end around stuff like that. In Oakland, you have Marshawn Lynch and Jalen Richard. Right?
Yep.
And then here we have Devontae Booker, D'Angelo Henderson, and Royce Freeman.
Yeah. I mean, look, as we sit here today, that is a fact.
That they're the worst.
Yes. Out of this group. I mean, you look at who these other teams have, and you look at what we have right now. I mean, our starter right now would be probably Devontae Booker. But that's not saying 6 weeks into the season that's going to be the case. We just have a lot of inexperience. We haven't had we have a lot of guys that haven't proven themselves, that haven't had opportunities. So we have a lot of young football players. But we could look back after 10 games. We could look back a year from now and say, oh, man, we were dead wrong on that because Royce Freeman's a stud. D'Angelo Henderson is who we thought we were. And this David Williams guy provided great depth. And Philip Lindsay, wow, man, he was awesome out of the backfield and provided a spark in third downs and passing situations. This group is great as a whole. But as we sit today, yes, that is a fact. But things change quickly. We have a lot of inexperience on our team when it comes to the running back position.
There's still something that bothers me a little bit with just the question marks coming in at that position, that there's nothing that you could point to that could convince someone why the Broncos aren't the last place in the AFC West in terms of a running game. Because there's... It's not founded. It's just great unknowns. Because what my gut wants to do is tell you that we're going to have a better running game than the Raiders. That's what my gut wants to say. I just don't believe that, and you and I have talked about this in the past, I just don't believe that Marshawn Lynch, at his age and the tread on that tire at, you know, 32 years old is going to. I'm a little bit down on that, but still, even if I were trying to make a case, I can't point to anything with substance and tell you why.
Right.
It's just a projection, and I got to tell you, that scares the hell out of me, because just as you said, we may look here after week 10 and say, hey, you know, Royce Freeman's a stud and this and that, and God, I hope that's the case. And I think we all do. But at the same time, we could easily look back in week 10 saying, you know, we should have known. We should have known that we were in a bit of trouble because Devontae Booker, we had a 250 carry sample size, and these other two guys were totally unproven NFL guys.
Yeah, and that's real. That could definitely be the case, that we get halfway through the season and we're like, wow, this group is really not getting the job done. They're underwhelming. And because of the inexperience, we just don't know. And we think that Royce Freeman is going to be a really good player. I mean, we've seen a lot from Devontae Booker, so I'm not holding my breath with him. I'm hoping these other guys really step up to the plate. But a lot of inexperience, a young, young group that we'll see. We'll see. But I think at the same time, I want to see this thing through. I don't want to bring in a veteran running back. I mean, who's out there that we're going to say, wow, this guy is going to be our answer? I don't think there's a guy out there that we can say this guy is going to be our answer. I like this group. I think they have good potential, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're going to be a great group or this guy's going to be a special player. We haven't seen it. It's hard to say that right now.
What about having a veteran here for the sake of having a veteran here? I mean,
fallback plan?
Just a fallback plan. Just some semblance of a known commodity. And I'm not saying put all your eggs in the basket of Eddie Lacy or Adrian Peterson or DeMarco Murray. All three of those guys are out there. You know, I could easily look at those guys with the same sort of juice left in the battery that I looked at Marshawn Lynch. But
are you ready to move away from Devontae Booker right now?
You know what? I feel like it's a little unfair saying it right now. I'd like to see preseason games first. But I'll tell you this. Let me say this. As down as I am on Marshawn Lynch in 2018, not obviously as a whole, but in 2018, if Marshawn Lynch was a free agent, I'd be down to bring him in here. And I'm not that high on Marshawn, as you know, but going into a season, I just feel like we're blindfolded at that position. And I don't know where, after I spin around and pin that tail on the donkey, I don't know where I'm going to end up.
Yeah, I'm down on Booker. But at the same time, I want to give him one more opportunity.
Look at you.
I want to give him one more opportunity and see if he can be the guy we hoped he was a couple years ago when we drafted him. So, he was injured in camp last year and obviously didn't have the year that we were hoping. I want to stay the course with this group, and I want to look at Booker and take a look at him. But I think if you want to bring a veteran in right now, then you got to part ways with Booker and just say we're done with him. We'll bring a veteran in, and that guy be the lead of this room.
Why is that the case?
There's only so many carries. There's only so many carries. You got to evaluate these young guys. I want to be able to evaluate them and see what we have so we can make the right decision. And if you have a Booker and another veteran, well, where are all these other carries going to go? How are we going to take a look at David Williams? How are we going to take a look at D'Angelo Henderson?
They already
screwed that up last year. Don't screw it up again.
Can you do that before?
I'm not laughing. You're laughing. Why? No, it's not funny.
No,
stop laughing.
I'm sorry. Is it possible?
Serious
to
over here.
Is that possible to do, though, before it counts? Like, you can't figure that. You can't get some sort of idea through weeks and weeks of training camp and four preseason games before it matters, before your ass is on the line against the Seattle Seahawks on September 9th. Can't we try to formulate some conclusion before it matters?
Yeah, but you can't do it, you know, before training camp. I got to have training camp to evaluate all these guys. And if you bring another veteran in, that guy's going to be taking reps away from these young guys. And I don't know what we have in Royce Freeman and David Williams might end up being the stud.
Could be.
We got to watch it, though. We got to give them opportunities.
But
so I don't want to just cast one of these guys aside right now and say, well, this guy's not going to get a lot of reps, and then we don't get to really truly evaluate him, and we move forward with an older guy like Adrian Peterson, and we end up not getting a lot from that guy. And now all of a sudden we let a young guy just go and just have to release him.
I am not trying to say that you wouldn't give everyone a legitimate evaluation. But what if we are 3 weeks into training camp and we are past the Minnesota Vikings preseason game that'll be almost, you know, just about a month from now, believe it or not, 5 weeks from now.
Wow.
But say we're past that first preseason game against the Vikings and the Bears, okay? And we got a really a great sample size of training camp, padded practices, coupled with the joint practice that we're going to have with the Chicago Bears.
Oh, we got joint practice this
year? We do.
At home.
We do.
That's great.
Against the Bears, I think it's a two-day deal. And it is against the Bears, I think, right? I'm pretty sure about that. I know we're doing a joint practice. I believe it's the Bears. And it is here.
That would be about, it's either the Vikings or the Bears. And usually the first preseason game, you don't do something before that one. But so Vikings or Bears.
Yep. I'm pretty sure it's the Bears. But anyway, so we're gonna have a great sample size of padded practice in training camp, two joint practices, as well as two preseason games. What if we get through that? And we're kind of looking around going, yeah, David Williams has looked all right. D'Angelo's looked all right. You know, Booker's, you know, okay, but we're not really legitimately optimistic going into the season.
I say let it play out for another week or two. And then the great thing about a running back room or running backs in general, doesn't take a rocket scientist to play that position. Hand them the football and run through the four hole. Run through the six hole. Run outside. Okay, and then you just have to have the talent, the natural ability to know, you know, when to cut it back, know when to, you know, or be explosive enough to run through arm tackles. So either you got it or you don't got it. So you don't need to bring running backs in here, you know, after the Chicago game to give them 2 or 3 weeks to get used to this offense. Guys can pick it up pretty quickly, especially veteran guys. So you can bring in an Adrian Peterson after, say, the last preseason games. If you're like, man, we're done with this group. This group is not getting it done. Let's go get us a veteran guy. Well, you can do that after, before the first week.
But here's what you can also do. You can also bring in a veteran and not even give him many carries at all because of what you just said, and just let him get acclimated to the scheme, the coaches, practices.
Yep.
Sign him for a bare-bones veteran minimum deal. And you want to know who I think they should get?
Uh-oh. Yep. Uh-oh.
Yep.
You got a big smile on your face.
Yep, I do.
I don't like where this
is
going.
Yes, I do. And
are you going to say Adrian Peterson?
Nope. I believe it in my gut. I believe it in my gut.
Who are the other two that you said earlier?
DeMarco Murray and Eddie Lacy.
Well, you're not going to say Eddie Lacy, so you're going to say DeMarco Murray.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Look, well, then how are you going to tell me a guy right now you didn't say his name earlier?
Because I was hoping you would butt in with it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but I gave you too much credit. Okay.
Yes, you did. You should know me better than that.
I refuse to let Vance Joseph and his wacky evaluation of the 2017 group distort what I saw. And if they're going to go get a veteran, and I think they should explore it, I'm not banging the table, but I think they should explore it either into training camp or take that wait and see approach.
What?
Jamal Charles.
Oh, I would love that.
I would love that. And I'm not trying to be funny. The guy led this team in yards per carry. He showed you a real burst physically. He's been around Bill Musgrave already. There's already built-in continuity from the previous season. And I just refuse to let their mishandling at that position with that guy in particular, again, distort how I view that guy. Because he's a free agent, and I think he would fit perfectly here if they handled it the right way. And it turns out Royce Freeman's a stud, and it turns out D'Angelo Henderson is everything we thought he could be coming out of Coastal Carolina, and let's just say even Booker can play, well, Jamal Charles is no longer a priority. But if we need him, he's there. Am I totally out of my mind?
No, not at all. I think all options are on the table. And, you know, if you do sign a veteran guy during training camp or early in training camp, because you want to add a little bit of experience to that group, well, that guy's not going to get a lot of reps because you need to evaluate these young guys. But I think the running back position is a position where, you know, like you said, after the Chicago game, second preseason game, if you're not seeing what you want to see from this group and then you want to add a veteran guy, you know, get that guy used to your system. Because running backs, the one thing that they do need is pass protection.
Sure.
You know where to go.
Yep.
And so that does take a little bit of time. But So if you want to bring a guy in to just get him used to, accustomed to the offense and the system and learning the playbook, then you could do it then, but not give him a whole lot of reps, because you know what? At the end of the day, you don't need to give Adrian Peterson a lot of reps in preseason. You can throw him some there at that last preseason game or whatever just to get some of the rust off. But some of those veteran DeMarco Murray, I mean, they don't need a lot of reps.
Right.
They know how to run the football. So you could do that then a couple weeks into training camp, and I would be fine with that. But I want to look at these young guys. I want to get them out on the field. I want to be able to evaluate them because they have potential. And that's the only time you can really truly evaluate running backs is whenever it's live.
Right.
And you don't do a lot of live work anymore.
It's true.
So it's kind of a catch-22. It's hard to evaluate these guys because they're not going live in practice a lot. They'll do some goal line stuff. So how do you truly evaluate running backs? It's, you know, you'll have some good opportunities there against Chicago when you practice them, because you will have live periods then. And then this preseason game, that's it, really.
Not going live in training camp at all?
I mean, they will a little bit, but not a lot. Not a lot at all. And then sometimes most of the live stuff is kind of thudded. You know, they'll wrap and they'll hold them and don't bring guys to the ground. So when you talk about truly, truly live, they do some goal line situations. But out in the middle of the field, that is very, very rare in today's NFL. Very rare. And they'll go against Chicago, they'll do live stuff, but not a whole lot of it. Not a whole lot, which is, you know, because you're so scared to get guys hurt and you don't have a lot of practice time. And you just don't see it anymore. You just kind of keep your fingers crossed and hope that make the right decisions and that it works out. And when the season starts, that these guys are ready to perform. But it's hard, especially for running backs.
How many reps did Jamaal Charles get in live periods last preseason?
Green Bay game. That was it. Green Bay game.
You know how many carries he had against Green Bay?
Eight.
Four. Four carries.
It looked good, though.
Against, you know what his yards per carry was?
6.2.
6.8.
Yeah, I mean.
It was like, hey, that's all we need to see.
Yeah, I've seen it. Good job.
That's
a wrap.
That's what I'm lobbying for this year. He doesn't need to occupy any of Rolls-Royce Freeman's reps. But you mentioned something so interesting, Stoke. The number one thing for running backs coming out of college to the NFL is not their adjustment to actually running the football. It's picking up blitzes. Last time I checked, Jamaal Charles, pretty good at that.
Oh, yeah, really
good
at it.
He's been great his whole career. And the fact that there's not a veteran running back also in the room to maybe just subtle coaching, just slight tips and, you know.
He's a good dude. He works hard. Would he want to put himself back in this situation again?
Well, that's what someone on the RamosLaw.com text line says.
Smart there's person, then.
No way that Jamaal Charles would sign with the Broncos again. Last year was an absolute travesty.
Well,
only thing I'd say, beggars can't be choosers.
Exactly. You know those paychecks? If the Broncos want to offer you some paychecks and no other team is offering you a paycheck, you say, okay, I can forget about last year. Right. It wasn't that bad.
Right.
All is forgiven. Maybe this year will be different, right? Because those paychecks are nice. You have a small window to make as much as you can and to last as long as you can in the NFL. And if nobody else is offering you a deal and the Broncos say, hey, come on back. We're sorry. It'll be like, okay, I forgive you. I like those checks.
Right.
So that's what would happen.
Yep, I completely agree.
But I think, obviously, you should keep him in mind on the back burner. Because if Devontae Booker is not looking the part, you know what you got in Jamaal Charles. And say you want to turn this thing over to one of these rookies or D'Angelo Henderson, and you're just not quite sure about these other guys, well, now you can bring in a guy like Jamaal Charles just to be that number two back, number three back, and say, hey, this is why we're bringing you in here, to mentor and to play a small role with this offense. And that's it.
Yep. It's not going to cost you a lot of money.
Oh, no, minimum.
Right. And, you know, if you sign him and you play guys – other than Jamaal, that's a good thing, because that must be showing that there's some level of trust and excitement with these younger guys. And guess what? If you sign them and don't play them as well, you did that last year anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's like some lasting ramifications if you know, Jamal Charles doesn't turn out to be, you know, touch the football 200 times this year.
I want to see that guy play another year.
Me too.
He deserves it. He's a good dude. He worked his tail off, and for whatever reason, the Broncos just turned a blind eye to it.
If Jamal Charles doesn't get picked up by the Broncos, and I'm not assuming he will. I'm sort of advocating.
Right.
But
the odds of that happening are really, really slim.
Really slim. Will someone give him another shot?
You saw him go down to New Orleans and meet with them. I think somebody will. I'm hoping somebody will. You see a lot of injuries happen to the running back group, whether it's, you know, during training camp or during the season. I think he will be picked up. And I hope he gets an opportunity to show that what he can do, because I think he can still play and still help a football team. I would love to see it here in Denver, but I think that ship has sailed. But you just never know. I never thought I was going to come back to Denver in 2012.
Sure.
It happened.
It's a good one. That's a good one. And someone says, please, guys, relax.
I was able to forgive and forget.
Right.
Nobody else wanted to sign me.
Right.
Oh,
is your direct deposit still working?
Okay.
Give me that orange jersey.
No more hard feelings. I can overlook a lot of things.
Flip-flopper.
This brings us to an interesting question. What was the Broncos' riskiest move this offseason?